Morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Cook Elshadi on behalf of Shared Partnership. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal, please. So a number of issues at play on this appeal. I'd like to start, unless the panel has a different preference, with the statute of limitations issue. There's two issues there. There's the continuing accrual doctrine, and then there's also the discovery rule. So starting with the discovery rule. The discovery rule provides that the statute of limitation will start to run once you have reason to suspect wrongdoing, unless you can show that a reasonable investigation by the plaintiff would not have revealed the basis for that particular cause of action. And that's key, is that particular cause of action. And so whereas the first prong is generalized, do you suspect wrongdoing in the colloquial sense? The second prong says we need to talk about the specific cause of action here, which is misrepresentation. Now, it's our position that the district court erred by essentially deciding this as a matter of law. This should have been a question of fact for the jury. And when we step back, just at a high level, if we think about the positions of the two parties. So we have Shared Partnership, a small company based in Ontario, Canada. And then we have Meta, the world's, if not the most powerful, one of the most powerful corporations in the world, surrounded by lawyers, automated chat channels. The notion that Shared Partnership could have penetrated Meta to understand that for this edit your ad provision, it wasn't just a breach, it was that there was no reason Meta could have believed that it could comply with this. It's just we would submit divorce from reality.
Counsel, and,
yes, Your Honor.
Isn't it the case that Shared received thousands of ad rejection messages that it believed violated Meta's obligation to provide customized rejection messages? I mean, so isn't that a problem?
I don't think so, Your Honor, from the second prong of the test, right? And so I think we'd quibble a little bit with the customized language, but your point's well taken. And I think
you'd agree. You don't agree it constitutes notice, though.
I agree that it would trigger the duty to investigate. Yes.
Okay.
And then the question is, once that duty's triggered, could Shared have figured out the basis for its misrepresentation cause of action? And so there's a difference between a breach of contract and knowing that you can't comply with the provision. And so what we know is when Mr. Nabagan, Shared CEO, started having issues understanding the ad rejections, he reached out to Meta and said, I need some help. And they said, don't worry, we've got you. We care about small business. We're going to help it get better, help you get better. We're going to get better. And so he took from that that they were going to do what they said they would.
So, Counsel,
then, yes, Your Honor.
Of the tens of thousands of these proposed ads that Shared submitted to Meta that Meta then rejected, how many did Shared edit and resubmit?
Unfortunately, due to the passage of time, there was no real evidence on exactly how many.
Were there any?
There were some, yes.
And did it ever, did Shared ever avail itself of the appeal process? You know how you could appeal and say, hey, I don't agree with you. This ad is just fine.
Sometimes it did. Often.
Many times.
Again, there was no evidence available from either party as to how many times that happened, but it did. I think most often, though, given how arbitrary these rejections seemed, it would be, from a resource perspective, it would be more advantageous for Shared to just submit a new ad than to try to appeal. If you think about the appeal, they go to humans, and so you'd have about a 48-hour lag, whereas you could just go back to the automated system and kick an ad through, you know, in seconds. And so the appeal option, while there, was not Shared's primary avenue to try to address the ad rejections.
So their primary avenue was just to resubmit a new ad?
Correct. And oftentimes the same ad would get approved because the AI that was reviewing these was wrong 50% of the time.
Okay, so I guess I'm confused as to how you're going to argue, that you weren't on notice that, well before the statute of limitations, you knew they were rejecting your ads. You thought, it's not, this doesn't make sense. Why are they rejecting them? And yet not much was done to find out why, because it would take 48 hours.
Well, so I think there's a difference between appealing to find out if they're going to approve it.
Okay.
And reaching out to Meta, which Mr. Nabagan did. And so he did try to reach out to Meta and ask for help. And they said, we've got you. We're going to do better. And then a few years later, he sent emails to Meta saying, please, somebody talk to me. He published a Medium post where he said, I can't get a hold of Meta. The press started reporting on these issues, saying these advertisers are having trouble getting a hold of Meta. And so when we think about the two different prongs, right, there's the notice prong.
I guess I'm lost into where the conversation broke down, because if you're telling me that they originally said, we got you, you're a small business, we'll take care of you, and then all of a sudden he couldn't get a hold of them, when did that happen? And how? What was the shift?
The shift, so he originally, Shared originally had a customer service rep within Meta. Okay, they lost access to that. And then he would reach out through the automated channels that anyone else could use to get to Meta.
Why did he lose the customer service rep? How? Is that like they just got rid of customer service reps or something between that?
They made a decision based on, I think it was held back as privileged, but there was a decision, I think it was a business decision between Shared and Meta that they no longer were going to support the client. So it's not a guaranteed right that you have. I think it's related to money.
So could you address the second part of the notice that you're saying that still allows you to survive this problem?
Yes, it's the fraud or the alleged fraud is that Meta knew it couldn't comply with this provision because its AI was running wild behind the scenes. There's no way that Shared could have penetrated that. There's no way that they would have told Shared, hey, by the way, half the time when we reject an ad, we are wrong. Right? That wasn't public until this case. That's really it, is how is Shared going to figure out the basis for its cause? There's a difference between suspecting wrongdoing in the main, the colloquial sense, and figuring out, well, there's something more here, right? So maybe you could figure out the breach of contract. And this is what the Fox case says, is that sometimes you can investigate and find out a cause for one claim, right? So medical malpractice. But you might not be able to figure out the product's liability issue at the same time. And just because you could have figured out one claim doesn't mean you could figure out the other. Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, your argument may have more force if Meta kind of strung you along and improved things, and went back. But here, I guess after the conversation where Meta says we'll do better, I think according to your allegations, they didn't do better, right? They continue to reject thousands and thousands of your ads. So I don't see why at that point you wouldn't have noticed that, okay, they're just blowing, allegedly smoke in my face, and they're never going to change.
Right. And so I think it, again, gets back to the difference between they're not complying and they're knowing that they can't comply. So I think there's a difference. You say you want someone to paint your house and you want them to paint it blue and they paint it yellow, that could be a breach of contract. But if they knew they were going to paint it yellow and they told you they were going to paint it blue, that's a different thing that you might not be able to figure out when you see that your house is yellow. And so I think that's the fundamental distinction.
Counsel, you have a contractor come to your house and once paints one wall, leaves, never comes back. You're on notice. They're not coming back. You were on notice.
Correct. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Your Honor.
Weren't you on notice at that point?
You were on notice that they weren't coming back, but you weren't on notice that they never intended to come back. If you see the distinction, there's a scienter component to fraud here that would have been impossible to penetrate, and we know that because they wouldn't talk to them. They had the automated channels. Some people saying, listen, we got you.
When did they start not talking to him anymore? What year?
2020. It was the first, was when he reached out, Mr. Nabagon reached out in December of 2020 after they had terminated his access to Facebook or his company's access to Facebook and said, I need to understand what's going on here. I want to talk to you about my situation. When he didn't hear back, he wrote a Medium article. He went to Business Insider. He repeatedly tried and tried. He invited them to come to Shared. He said, let me open up my doors to you. Let's figure this out. We've spent $53 million with you over the course of a decade. There's got to be a way to resolve this. And I think that's important context, is that things were good. And so when they said we're going to improve, he wanted to believe them because he had no choice but to believe them, because how else are you going to get at it? So I think that would be the delayed discovery rule, unless you have further questions. I could talk about continuing accrual doctrine. So on the continuing accrual doctrine, we think this is a textbook application of that, right? So if you think about the structure of the way ads are submitted, each time you submit an ad, you put forth an order. The order is specific to an ad or a set of ads. The pricing is specific to those ads. The audience that's going to be targeted is specific to those ads. That was done thousands of times. Each time Shared did that, Shared had to assent to the advertising policies, which included the provision that we've alleged to be misrepresented. And so when you have a series of transactions like that, over the course of time, the continuing accrual doctrine applies to make sure that the equities ensure that you're not going to be out of luck for later transactions that are within the limitations period just because you might have had one without the limitations period. We think that's exactly what's going on here, right? So if there was an untimeliness issue, It was only to those ads that predated the period. Anything within the period, because of Meta's recurring obligation to not defraud Shared, should be timely. And if we think about a situation where someone runs one ad 5 years prior, they think that there's something wrong with the ad. They think maybe Meta didn't tell them the truth about it, but there's just one. And so they decide, we're not going to take any action on that. I'm going to go look at Twitter and advertise on Twitter. 5 years later, they come back and run a whole new set of ads. But this time it matters. Or this time it impacts the business, the rejections and the AI doing the wrong thing. It can't be that party's out of luck 5 years later, because 5 years earlier, there was one time where they should have suspected that. And that's where I think the equities of the continuing accrual doctrine come into play.
So, counsel, I need you to tell me why I'm wrong in the way that I'm thinking about this. I'm looking at this as fraudulent inducement, right? They induced you via fraud to do this. But that fraudulent inducement, doesn't that apply to that original contract?
No, Your Honor. It applies every time you run an ad. So when you run an ad, they say, for this ad, if we reject it, we're going to tell you why.
So it's brand new every time.
It's brand new every time. Every ad, well, there, I shouldn't say every time. There might be ads that were repeats, but the order's different, right? And so you could have a different target audience, right? A lot of the times they would test one ad and say, let's target, you know, people between 20 and 22. Let's target one over here with people 30 to 35, men, women. There's all sorts of flexibility in terms of targeting. And so each transaction was its own individual transaction. And each time Shared made a submitted an order, it was fraudulently induced to do so by the representation in the ad or ad provision.
So it has nothing to do with the original contract?
No, I mean the original terms, and if you think about it, Matter, those terms change all the time, right? So they're saying Shared first ran an ad in August 2016 when this ad or ad provision came in. That's the same contract until 2021. Those policies change. And so every time, that's why every time you submit an ad, you have to click the publish button where you assent to the then current terms, right? And so if it was just one contract forever, that wouldn't make much sense. You have to assent every single time. And that's the series of transactions. Getting into my rebuttal time, I guess just briefly on the conversion claim, we think that this is a pretty clear situation where the duty does not arise from Meta's status as a publisher, but rather a promise it made. It's the Barnes case. It's the same thing as in Barnes, where the issue was the failure to take down illicit material from the internet, but the promise was we will do it. And so we think it's the same thing here, that yes, they took down the property right, but the problem is they did so without complying with the terms of service, which required a clear, repeated, or serious breach. And unless Your Honors have any questions on that, I'll reserve.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'm Eric Chomsky, and I represent Meta. I'd like to start with the timeliness issue, where most of the questions have been, and then hopefully spend a couple of minutes on conversion. There is one simple, undisputed fact that makes Shared's misrepresentation claims both untimely and waived, and it is exactly the thing, Judge Mendoza, that you started out with. Shared itself suspected wrongdoing in 2016 or 2017 at the very latest, continued to purchase hundreds of thousands, I have to emphasize this, literally hundreds of thousands of ads, indeed asked to remain on Facebook after having been removed for having too many questionable ads, and then didn't sue for 6 years. So let's start with the statute of limitations. The timeliness problem is so obvious that Shared doesn't even really contest it. Instead, they invoke two exceptions to the statute of limitations, and of course, they have the burden of establishing them. First, they invoke the delayed discovery rule, and it is really important to be crisp here about what their argument is, and we heard it again just now. They say that they didn't have notice until later of one particular thing, Meta's scienter. That is to say that Meta made a knowing misrepresentation. That argument is wrong as a matter of law, and the California Supreme Court has repeatedly explained why. A claim accrues when the plaintiff, quote, suspects or should suspect that her injury was caused by wrongdoing And the California Supreme Court in Jolly explains that wrongdoing just means wrongdoing in the lay or the colloquial sense. We have found no case. They certainly don't cite one in which a court has attempted to assess whether the plaintiff had notice of the defendant's scienter. And in fact, the Vera case from the California Court of Appeal analyzes things totally differently. There, it sees a gap between what was being allegedly, what was being represented and the facts that were apparent to the plaintiff.
They seem to be saying that you strung them along, essentially, that there was this conversation and then there was cutting off of communication. There was a person that used to go to, they can't go to. That seems to be the argument. So what's your position as to that?
So I'm actually not sure that is their argument. Remember that what they say about the communications and my friend on the other side indicated this in response to Judge D'Alba, that those communications were from December 2020. The statute of limitations had expired at that point. Now, there's a whole separate set of problems with that, including the fact that the communications were about a different topic entirely. They were about getting removed from the Facebook service, not about this question that's the focus of the fraudulent misrepresentation claim. But I also think it's important to focus on the notice requirement, right? They're saying that we couldn't have done an investigation. They didn't need to do an investigation because they were already admittedly on notice of the supposed wrongdoing. Remember, they say themselves, and this is a quote from their summary judgment papers, by July 2017, Shared, quote, could have suspected wrongdoing. That's at 2 ER 76. And so there was no need for an investigation. And just to tie off the point, the Miller case rejects the idea that a plaintiff could just say, well, it's a big company. I never could have discovered anything. There it was Bechtel. And the California Supreme Court says that doesn't satisfy your obligation to say that you couldn't have investigated.
Can you address the point made by your friend on the other side with respect to the continuous accrual doctrine? He makes maybe perhaps a superficially appealing point that, well, terms of service always change, so this suggests that there are separate contracts or transactions.
So let me start with the legal rule and then get to the sort of factual question about whether there are new terms each time. As a legal matter, the continuous accrual doctrine just doesn't apply here. And it's important to look at the cases and see where that doctrine has applied. It has applied to things like installment payments, where each missed payment is a separate legal wrong. The JB Painting case is really helpful and instructive on this. There, it's the delivery of a good, and by statute, each delivery amounts to a new warranty and so triggers a new legal right, that is to say, a new breach of warranty claim. But the California Supreme Court in the ARYEH case, that's A-R-Y-E-H, explains that fraud is different. It doesn't apply to, and Judge D'Alba, this is exactly the import of your question, it doesn't apply to, quote, a single fraud committed at contract formation. And the rule, in fact, goes beyond that. ARYEH relies on the California Court of Appeals decision in Metz. And Metz says that where you have multiple allegedly fraudulent misstatements, all relating back to an original wrong, then precisely because the duty at issue is the fraudulent misrepresentation, remember that fraud is about whether you've tricked someone into doing something. Where you have a situation like that, the continuous accrual doctrine just doesn't apply. And the facts of Metz are pretty striking. Right there, it was an initial misstatement about the value of, I think it was a car, I think it was an insurance appraisal. There were subsequent alleged misstatements about the valuation. And the California Court of Appeals says, no, this all just goes back to the initial misrepresentation. So Judge Lee, that's a long windup to get to your question. They didn't allege that the terms were different. They didn't point to different terms or any difference in the advertising policies upon which they purportedly relied. That this is all just going back to the initial supposed misstatement in the self-serve ad terms and ultimately the advertising policies. If there are no other questions about the statute of limitations, I want to just briefly remind the court that waiver would be an alternate basis on which to affirm here. And this is truly a quintessential case of waiver, again, for the reason, Judge Mendoza, you started with. Shared received thousands upon thousands of ad rejections that it thought in real time were defective. And they did nothing. They said nothing. They took no action. And they admitted in the course of the litigation that they actually didn't do or say anything. What instead they did was purchase hundreds of thousands of additional ads pursuant to, again, these same terms that they said contained a fraudulent misrepresentation. The district court, in an otherwise careful opinion, we think just got this wrong and got this wrong by overreading or misreading the Oakland Raiders case. The district court said under Oakland Raiders, you can only have a waiver if you have actually ratified the earlier contract, that is to say, entered into a new contract. And Oakland Raiders itself makes clear that that's not the case. Oakland Raiders made clear that that was sufficient to constitute a waiver, but it's not the legal rule and it's not what's necessary. And we know that because Oakland Raiders said, and this is at page 1193, that there's a waiver if the plaintiff makes, quote, new arrangements or engagements concerning the subject of the contract. Not a new contract, not a ratification of the original one, new arrangements or engagements. And that's what Shared did here hundreds of thousands of times over. So if there are no questions about that, let me pivot back then to the conversion issue. And there we need to assess separately the conversion theory that Shared actually pleaded and pressed below and its new theory on appeal. In the district court, Shared alleged that California law gave it a property right in its Facebook pages, and that Meta had no right to, quote unquote, this is straight out of the complaint, to unpublish them. That's at 3 ER 490, and they articulate exactly the same theory in their opposition to our motion to dismiss at 3 ER 437. That theory, the one that they actually pressed below, is squarely foreclosed by Barnes. And obviously, there's already been a lot of discussion about Section 230 this morning, but this is just in the heartland. And I would remind the court that Barnes said that Section 230 forecloses liability for, quote, editorial functions such as deciding whether to withdraw from publication third-party content. And that's exactly what they've alleged here. So that's the theory that they pressed below. On appeal, because of Barnes, they've pivoted and they're arguing a different theory. Their theory is that the conversion occurred when Meta removed Shared from Facebook in violation of the terms of use. Right? You promised that you would only take us off for certain reasons. That's what the terms say. You violated that, and that amounts to conversion. So leaving aside the forfeiture, that theory fails as a matter of law under the economic loss rule. For there to be a tort theory that relates to a contract, the duty must arise, and this is a quote from the California Supreme Court in Ehrlich, the duty must arise independent of the contract. But here, the claimed duty, the conversion, isn't independent of the contract. On the contrary, it depends precisely on the contract. And I would just point the court, we cited this in our briefing, but I'd point the court to the Motivo case. It's a Central District of California case. It's just very helpful analysis that walks through how to think about the relationship between conversion and breach of contract. I would note also that there are a number of cases in which courts have rejected the idea of a conversion theory for terminating an online account, and we cite those in the red brief at page 31.
Remind me again, this was decided on summary judgment, not at the pleading stage, right?
That is correct,
Your Honor. All right, so leave to amend is probably not a realistic option here.
So they've made passing reference to that in their reply brief, but I think it's important to shut the door on that. Let's remember, my friend on the other side referred to the passage of time here. These are facts from 10 years ago, an initial complaint that was filed over 4 years ago. They, in fact, amended their complaint twice. They didn't ask the district court for leave to amend to invoke some new theory of conversion. If that weren't enough, there is an additional layer of forfeiture, which is that on appeal, the only place they've referred to leaving to amend is a one clause in one of their issues presented. And so the argument is forfeited again on appeal. And just to belabor the point slightly, that their theory is that Calise somehow changed something in Barnes, and so they should be able to amend because of that. Just as a reminder, Calise invoked Barnes more than 30 times. It didn't change the law. It couldn't have changed the law. It was a three-judge panel of this court, and Calise was decided nearly a year before judgment was issued in this case. If they thought there had been some basis to amend, then it was incumbent on them to ask for that long, long ago. So if there are no other questions, I would just remind the court again that these are old facts and a very old case, and we would ask the court to affirm the dismissal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Your Honors. Just touching on the conversion, that was dismissed way back when at the pleading stage. That was not a summary judgment issue. We did ask for leave to amend. We are not trying to run away from Barnes. We think Barnes is consistent with Calise, and as the Judge Seaborg found in his order dismissing the conversion claim, he read our allegations as being rooted in the terms of service. And so there is an amendment issue here. We did flag it as an issue presented. On the statute of limitations issue, there was a suggestion that at 2 ER 76, Sherrod admitted that it could have suspected wrongdoing. What we said there was, at best for Meta, we could have suspected wrongdoing in 2017, and we investigated in 2020, which was in the limitations period. So that they're trying to take this as some sort of admission that, ha, your claims are time-barred. That was not what we were saying. We were saying that at best for Meta, 2017, and then we investigated in 2020, and so we're still timely, and that's very clear if you read 2 ER 76. In terms of the wrong, right, there was a suggestion that the wrong was way back when we first agreed to the terms of service. That wasn't the wrong. The wrong was not giving the information in response to that of your ad provision where they knew that they couldn't do it. And each time Shared ran an ad, that was the wrong, right? And so there's been sort of an attempt by Meta to say, no, this is your argument. Your argument is that we induced you way back when in the terms of service in 2016. But that's not our argument, and they don't get to decide our argument. Our argument is that each transaction was a recurring transaction that carried with it an obligation not to defraud. And if we think about the REA case, it was a lease for a printer, right? And Canon would send people in periodically to figure out how many copies someone ran, and they would charge for overages. The problem with that is they were running test copies and then including those in the overage charges. And so you had a master set of terms and a lease. Then you had purchase orders for service underneath it. Same thing here. This is a common thing where you have a master services contract. And then under that contract, you have various sub-agreements, each of which carries with it various duties. Sometimes there's a warranty with it. Always there's a duty to not defraud. And so the continuing accrual doctrine we would submit is tailor-made for this situation where you have an overarching set of terms. That's true. No one's disputing that. But when you're submitting thousands of orders under them, there's a recurring obligation. And on the waiver point, just quickly, clear and convincing evidence, they needed to show that they reasonably believed that we waived. They didn't show any evidence on that. And I would also note that the way they argued it in the district court, they're running away from it a bit now. Because in the district court, it was, hey, you entered into these thousands of transactions, and every time you did that, you should have known that you shouldn't. That's inconsistent with their continuing accrual doctrine. And why that theory is wrong is that each transaction was its own separate transaction, and the law on election of remedies says that you can stand on a contract and sue for fraud later. So I know I'm out of time. If there's any questions, otherwise we'll submit.
Great. Thank you. Thank you both for the helpful argument.
Thank you very much.
The case is submitted.